step in, and then we can do it in a lighter style, maybe. Okay. Topics I will cover is whether URI just come from, where UNO just come from, what it has to offer for you if you want to use it, where it is great, where it is probably not that great to use, then some practical hints on how to use it, and yeah, some kind of outlook how we can proceed in the future. The history is we started OpenOffice or StarOffice quite some time ago. You all know it is a monolithic application that was not designed from the start to be programmed in any way. It was just an end-user office suite application. Then in the 90s, we decided to have it programmable. And we needed some model for this to program, and some component model. We designed our own. Yes, and the design aspect was you should be able to write add-ins in the office suite that do some specific tasks. Like what you do with StarOffice Basic or OpenOffice Basic macros as well. And you should also be able to externally connect to the office and use its functionality from other applications, like plug in the office or use it to print files or to convert to PDF, things like that. The design was influenced by Java, by COM, by Corba. Lots of these influences shine through in the actual names of concepts. And it took some time to reach the point that we have for quite some time now, a quite stable point. We call it UNO 3. It was the third iteration to get everything into the shape it has by now. On our trip, we also did some more adventurous sidetracks into the world of remote client-server computing, using UNO for that. That was not that successful. I'll maybe show some reasons why UNO is not that shiny in that area. Earlier this year, by popular or even by a paying customer's demand, we started to take UNO out of the OpenOffice.org source tree to make an independent, standalone product out of it. The customer, that's quite interesting. He has nothing to do with office suits or whatever. He is doing hardware software combined things, and he was looking around for a component model to use in his products. And he did a Google search and by chance found our UNO model and had a look at it and compared it to other offerings, open source as well as commercial, and found it quite interesting what we had, and liked it the best, and then contacted us, contacted Jürgen Schmidt, and that way we got it started, and he even paid for it. Yes, as I said, we now have URI 1.0, which is stable. It is independent of OpenOffice. You can use it for your own project that need not have anything to do with what the office does, whatever you like. I heard from Cedric that he plans to maybe use it in a student project to design a video editor, and I think this is great. I'd like to hear about other success stories that might emerge from here. What is also true is that maybe each large application has its own component model. We started out to design our own as well. Might be a naive approach or a typical approach, probably also. It would, of course, be great to consolidate in this area and have less component models in the end, but it is hard to, of course, it is hard to convince people to give up their favorite component model and switch over to UNO. So if you're realistic, UNO probably won't be the savior of the world, or maybe it would be. We'll see. We wouldn't mind if it would be, of course. So I'll now talk a little bit about what this component model, or what is specific to the UNO component model. Matthias in the previous talk already told you about some other aspects of UNO, how to program it. I'll cover slightly different ground, so it won't be too boring, I hope. Just a second. So what the UNO component model is that it is an abstraction to give you reasonably transparent, reasonably efficient, and type-safe remote, or not necessarily remote, but just universal method invocation. You have just the interfaces defined in an IDL, and you can call like between C++ and C++, if both sides of the interface are in C++, then it's just a virtual function call, so that is as fast as can get. If your both sides are in Java, it is just the Java JVM mechanism to make the call. If you want to call from C++ to Java, you don't have to take care of all these JNI details. That is done by our bridges. We have some conceptual intermediate format. We call it binary UNO, and that is the intermediate format where we, into which we bridge all the objects that live in the different language spaces. So when you call from C++. To some UNO object that is implemented in Java. This is transparent for you. And what happens behind the scenes is that it gets converted to binary UNO and then via a JNI bridge to Java. What is also possible is to get out of the process. We have some remote bridges. This remote thing can be into process on the same machine, or you can do remote machine communication that's done via sockets or name pipe, what we call it, Unix domain sockets. Seen from a slightly different angle, UNO allows you to build your components. You can either build your components as a set of modules, so a very modularized approach, which has, of course, benefits. If we had started OpenOffice that way, we would have now a more flexible thing that we could more easily adapt to the needs we have. I just noticed I sometimes say StarOffice and sometimes OpenOffice. I hope you don't mind, it is so deep in me too, but I'll try to stick to OpenOffice here. Sorry. If you want to go that way and have an application just build up from components, we have an executable, it is called just UNO, and you have one component that implements an XMain interface, and that just has one method called run, and that gets started by the executable, and the executable will take care of all the necessary things like starting up service managers, so you have access to all the services, and when there are services implemented in Java or in Python, the necessary bridges will be used to do those calls. So this is the most easy way to get started with using another way to use UNO in an application, similar to how OpenOffice started using it, is to have extension points to make your application extensible or even scriptable. A third idea that maybe my take on is to have UNO components replace the idea of dynamic libraries, to have them, because they are type safe. With a dynamic library, you just have C functions or some symbols that you can call if you're not sure. You have to know the parameters, and nobody checks it, so it might crash. And with the, you know, it would be a type safe approach to this. Dynamic components that can be reused across applications. Some of the topics where we are different from other component models, for example, like Corba, is that with UNO, you have little excess baggage that you carry around. For example, when you want to use many different interface types, you need those IDL interface definitions for those types. In other component models, stubs are generated for these types that have to be real C++ code, for example, that has to be linked in. With UNO, you just have a head of files that are very thin things. There is no actual code for them. This is just abstract base classes. So there's no additional code. So that company that decided to use UNO, this was one reason for them to choose UNO, because they wanted to use many types and they had problems compiling test cases where they used many types with other component models. Another great point, I think, is our concern about stability. We're sometimes even quite religious about that, not changing our APIs. This is, on the one hand, our OpenOffice UNO APIs, but also the APIs we offer in UNO itself. For example, the C++ APIs, the system extraction layer, we're very careful not to break it, so that when you now write a component, it will run in the URI 1.0, and it will continue to do so in the future URI. So when you now write a component for OpenOffice, will run in OpenOffice 2.0 and 3.0 and whatever. Unless you hit a bug, of course. We're cross-platform, so we support all the platforms. URI supports all the platforms that are supported by OpenOffice, which is at least Linux, Solaris, Windows, and all the active ports that we have from the community, which is also a selling point for URI. To have this great variety. Last but not least, we have quite some substantial amount of documentation gathered over the years. We have our, Matthias already mentioned it in his previous talk, we have our website, we have the huge developer's guide with us. Many of the chapters are centered on using the API for OpenOffice, of course. But especially the first part, the getting started part, and the basics concept, the language-specific parts are pertain to the URI in the same way, of course. And we have our mailing lists, where you might know that we are quite active in giving response, or many people from the community are very active there in giving response to all kinds of questions, and I think this is really great. And one more point, I think we, what came out of discussions here at this conference until now, we will have to go more into the direction of using a wiki to make the information more easily accessible. I think together with Ian, not sure he's still here, maybe get something going there. So I talked about the pros of using there are places where is probably not the best solution, and this is mainly in areas where you distribute your computations across, especially across multiple machines. The reasons being, as I said on the other slide, we want to have a model that is transparent, or as transparent as possible. That of course is problematic, as anybody should know by now. Transparent remote computing is a fallacy that it doesn't really work. Yes, Michael, we knew that for a long time already. But we still had this approach because it is easy to use, and for the work we are doing with the Open Office, it is quite sufficient.
Will some grid executives in Salesforce know that transparent remote computing is something that might work?
I'm not sure. You have to ask them. An example what can go wrong is when you have two processes communicating via and one of they are both on the same machine, let's assume one of the processes crashes. We have a UNO bridge between them, this ERP, remote protocol bridge. The operating system will notice that one of the processes crashes, so it will shut down the socket, and the ERP bridge will discover this and dispose this bridge. This bridge is also represented as a UNO object, and what will happen is that on process B, where we have some, imagine we have mapped in an object that lives in process A to process B. Process B is kind of proxy for that object. We now make calls on this proxy. They would have to be forwarded to process A, but the bridge is disposed, and the bridge knows about all the proxies it created. So it knows that this proxy for the object from process A is no longer functional. So when this proxy gets a request for a method, it would just send back a disposed exception. So whenever you make a method call across UNO, and if you're not sure whether the target object really is within the same process, you potentially will get disposed exceptions. This is one place where the transparency breaks down. The problem is that disposed exceptions also used in other cases where you manually dispose certain objects to get rid of ring references. So you can't even be sure if you get a disposed exception that it is due to some remote failure. In this first example, things won't be that different from a single process, because process A crashes, process B will get a disposed exception eventually, and if you're not prepared for it because you want it to be really remote transparent, well then your process will crash as well. So you have the same thing as if both were in the same process, because then the process would have crashed. Also once process A now crashes. So in that sense, there is we do not lose anything here by having this remote transparency that doesn't work in principle. The picture gets a little different when you have two machines running, and what crashes is not the foreign host, but the connection in between. If you unplug one of the machines, the other one will not notice that the connection is down, there will be no this post exception. You will just lose connection. And for example, if you have some object from host B mapped out to host A, our proxies use reference counting to tell back when the proxy dies. It tells back that the original object is not used any longer, so that might be garbage collected as well. And if the connection is broken, there will be no callback, and we have, for example, resource leaks in host B. This is different, for example, to Java RMR, which uses leases to have a more sophisticated approach to the problems of distributed computing. But we wanted to keep it simple, and for the things we currently use UNO for, it appears to be sufficient. Another detail that might be curious is when you have many distributed, or when you have distributed your computing about many environments, and you have some object, this red dot is just one object that lives in environment A. You pass it as a parameter, for example, down to environment B. There will be a proxy in environment B. You pass it on from B to C. There will be now a proxy in C. But when you make a call on this object in environment C, it won't take the shortcut to environment A, but it will always go the road the proxies took in the first place. So we don't have the concept, or a reference to an object doesn't carry with it a notion where it came from, no home information that could be used to do shortcuts in these cases. And still another aspect where you might face problems is when you design your interfaces that describe how you interact between your different components. Like you have some component sitting somewhere, there's lots of data, you want to get that data and process it, then you have two approaches. Either the one you take all the data in one big swoop, it will be copied across the wire, or then you work on the data locally. These data are just structs, for example, so they are not objects themselves, but just or integers or strings or whatever, so they are just copied across the wire. Or if you think you will only need some of these data, not the whole sequence, but just the first and the last element, then it would be nonsense if you were doing it over the wire to copy the whole thing. So you might make a more complex scenario where you define some interface to get individual elements of the sequence and then just pass this interface over the wire, which is just very tiny amount of information. And then whenever you do a call on it, like get first or get last or get the count, then additional information would pass over the wire. If you just concerned or with the complete transparency, you wouldn't have to to care about these details when you design your APIs. But in a real world scenario, you do have to take care of them to have well-performing applications in the end. Another aspect where there's place for improvements is security. As with so many products, I think that started out small and then grew, and attractivity of using them grew, and attractivity of misusing them also grew. There's two parts to this. At the level where you have distributed your application, and at the communication level, Security is just controlled at the moment. We use sockets, so it is just controlled by the operating system. For example, if you have a client server set up, the server could be set up in a way that it only listens on the local host interface so that at least nobody from outside could attack you. More interesting and or the first part can, of course, you could add SSL layers, for example, to add security here, because all our protocols are defined and publicly defined, so you can just get into the code and add whatever you need to improve security. More interesting is the second part, when you have an application that can be extended by components like OpenOffice, like it is the case for OpenOffice, you can always have the problem that there are components that misbehave, that crash your process by design or by mistake. For C++ components, of course, there is no convincing story here, because in C++ you can do anything in the process. One approach that might be a very limited sandboxing kind of thing is to have components run in their own processes. So you could spawn a process that runs this UNO process to just start this one component, and you talk to it across a local host connection. So when that component crashes, it at least doesn't crash your whole application. We currently use this approach in OpenOffice for the live deployment of new components, because we also can undeploy these components, and you can't or a component is just a dynamic library, and you can add them at the moment to our OpenOffice process, but you cannot remove them. So what we did is take them out into external processes. So we have all the framework already set up for this approach. With Java, you could, in principle, use Java's security mechanisms to control what a Java component is allowed to do. I'm not aware that anybody actually does it at the moment, so there might be some minor pitfalls that show up. But in principle, this should work, and that's probably the way to go when you want to have secure components. Now to the practical aspects of actually using the URI, trying it out. It is available under this rather lengthy URL, but Martin Heumichel already promised me yesterday evening to take care to get it onto our official download page. I nudged him for quite some time, and I hope it will be there. At least once 2.0 is finally available, so that you can download OpenOffice and can download just as well, just only the URI. Currently, to program the URI, to build applications for it, you also need the SDK that we have for OpenOffice. You need the tools that are in there, like the IDL compiler, the header file, the UNO IDL files of all the types we bring with us, or the C++ header files, for example, like for the system extraction layer that is included in the URI. You probably all know this make environment that we have with the SDK. Some of you like it, some of you don't like it and cry for an IDE. But at least for those who do like it, you can also use it to compile URI applications. There's now an additional question during configuration whether you want to connect or whether you set this SDK up to use an OpenOffice or just a plain URI. There's a small unit test zip file which got created along when we did this extraction of the URI. It contains test cases which also serve as examples. These test cases are like writing UNO components or writing UNO applications that use this UNO executable. It is currently only available in this URI module, but I think I should put it into a more prominent place, like on our UDK website or kind of somewhere. And once you've installed the URI, for example, on Linux, it comes as an RPM, so we did not do the mistake we did with OpenOffice to have, we did in the past to have not system compliant installers, but have our own installer. So in the URI from the start, we use the system way of installing software, and for Linux, for example, it is RPM. So you have one RPM file that gets by default installed to one fixed place on the system. So no need to hunt for the software like you now have to. If you want to program against the OpenOffice, you always have the problem, where is it installed? You have to find it. We have helpers by now for that, but this problem is not there with the URI. The versioning is also tracked by, for example, by RPM. We now have 1.0. We'll change it only in compatible ways. As I said, we are very keen to keep our compatibility up. So there will sometime be a 1.1, and then there will be applications that need a 1.0 or really do require a 1.1, and they will inform you at install time that your URI that is installed is too old and you have to upgrade. The URI comes with all the necessary types and services that you know from OpenOffice programming. It of course has not the types and services that are specific to OpenOffice, like it does not know about text documents or CAD documents and whatever, but it has all those services necessary for, it has a service manager of course, it has the capabilities to introspect, to invoke by introspection, it has URL resolver functionality and all this stuff, and then the stuff to start code in Java and across bridges and whatever. And if you have your own components that bring their own types or their own services, we have some standard places where you can add them. That is also based on the system standards. Like on Unix, we use etc opt URI, or additionally in your home directory, in a .uri file or a directory, you can store these things. Or you can also bring them along with the application. The URI executable, for example, knows command line arguments to say whether you want to use the globally available services or don't want to use them, and have all packaged in one place as one application independent of the rest of the machine installation. So quite flexible. Where will we go in the future? Or URI 1.0 deliberately is just a very easy approach to take out out of OpenOffice, because at the time we did it, we thought OpenOffice 2.0 would be really near, so we didn't want to break any code by making modifications. So we just took what was there and duplicated it into a URI. That means, for example, for registering new components, you have to use these well-known and maybe not that much liked old command line tools like RecComp to register components. OpenOffice by now has this nice feature of the package manager with even a graphical interface. Matthias showed it to get his tab browsing component installed with just a few clicks. This, of course,